out across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. Well, I hope you guys have noticed how many different ways there are to listen to this program other than YouTube. Yeah, I'm sorry to say it, YouTubers, but you are being censored. You are receiving alternative facts. I mean, where we're at right now with censorship, YouTube is going to start using Wikipedia facts to bring in the to combat alternative facts. Facebook's going to start using Snopes to correct your false narratives. And, of course, all your data is being gathered in a massive array that just it puts Big Brother of 1984 to shame. So if you guys don't want to be censored, if you want to get this whole show, you don't want to be lost in the narrative, you don't want to get your alternative facts from Wikipedia and Snopes, then you need to come to freemantv.com. You may only have to come here once, because once you do, you can go to the frequently asked questions page, the FAQ, and see all the ways to get the feed for this program. And I guarantee that you'll like these ways much more. And you will get a direct feed, no one collecting your data, no one caring what you're listening to, because it's all me. I've created it, I pay for it, I produce it, it comes to you. So if you go to freemantv.com, just look at all the different ways. You can listen on your iPhone, your iTunes, your Android. We're now on Spotify, so if you're a Spotify user, hey, we're there. Stitcher. You can use your Android. You can use the website. Hey, you know, that one works great. You know how YouTube forces you to stay on that page and you can't surf while you're listening on your phone? Well, guess what? FreemanTV.com doesn't do that. You can listen to the show and surf, and I won't even charge you any extra. As a matter of fact, it's free. So come on over, FreemanTV.com, and look at all the many ways that you can subscribe to this feed other than YouTube. Because YouTube's censoring me. They blocked me. They hit me with their community strikes. They did not allow me to upload a video for months. So what am I supposed to do when those 15,000 people that listen there regularly, you guys are awesome. I don't want to lose you. And yet, when I go down on YouTube, you're wondering where I went. And for some reason, there's a disconnect that I can't get you to go from YouTube to freemantv.com. I understand. You have to learn new technology. You have to maybe find a podcast player that works for you. But all you got to do is get there, click one time, get your feed, and boom, you're getting the show every week without censorship and without alternative facts being thrown in there. So that's my spiel right now. Get over to freemantv.com and check out the numerous ways. We are also now going to be broadcasting through the Truth Be Told Network, and you will find that at truthbetoldnetwork.org. And so the show has another home. So Spotify, Stitcher, Truth Be Told Network, Freeman TV, Android, iPhone, iTunes, anything that just gets you the direct feed, the straight feed from here, because that's where you need to be to get it. So thank you all so much. And tonight, folks, we are talking with Stefan Verstappen. And we had such a great discussion last time on genetically modified psychopaths that I felt right now was the perfect time to speak with this Canadian author again. Stefan is the author of numerous books, at least 8 books, including The Way of the Warrior, The Art of Urban Survival, Community Survival Plans. You get the idea. Also getting deeper into China strategies. Stefan's first book, which is the title of his website, ChinaStrategies.com. He's written dozens of articles for magazines, newspapers, and has worked as an instructor for St. John's Ambulance. He's a wilderness guide, a community organizer, martial arts instructor, getting deep into 35 years of experience in Kung Fu and other martial arts, even spending 5 years studying in China. He is the creator of the documentary Defense Against the Psychopath. You know him, you love him, and he wants to tell you how awesome you are. Please welcome to the Free Zone, Stefan Verstappen. Hey.
Hey, good to be back on the show, Freeman. And yeah, no, because what I want to say is you have the greatest listenership of all the podcasts. Because when I did your show, I got so much positive feedback and more positive feedback from your show than doing Coast to Coast AM or Jeff Rentz or any of those other people. I got lots of feedback. And also, your audience is generous because they did go to my website and they purchased some of my books. And thank you very much, all of you that did purchase a book from me. My kitties, thank you, because now I can buy them the expensive cat food. And but it's no, I really noticed a difference doing your show, Freeman. I mean, it was just, I do these other shows, you don't hear anything back, you know, there's a couple of comments, this and that. But with your show, I got emails, and I always respond to everybody that emails me. If you have to take the time to write me, I will take the time to respond. And but you have a great audience, a great listenership, and my thanks to all of you that are listening now.
Thank you. Thank you so much for saying that, because I tell them often that this is what I hear from the guests all the time, and I want them to know. And now they hear it from you, so now it's not just me fluffing them up. It's the truth, folks. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, they're awesome.
And I've been saying that for years now, and I feel just, you know, I got goosebumps right now, Stefan. I really do.
Well, I remember you saying it last time I was on the show, and you're saying, oh, my audience is so great, and I'm thinking, yeah, right.
Right, right. I know the game. I really do. You know, I've been on both sides of this microphone, and I know that you're there about to give us 2 hours of heartfelt, trying to save the world information, and you're not going to get a dime, you know?
No.
You are just, you know, it's an altruistic path that we've chosen. It took you a long time to put a donate button on your website.
Oh, I know. I hate to ask for help. And I feel like it's a weakness if I ask people to help me or to donate. But the truth of the matter is, you know, I live on fumes, you know, all writers do. And anybody that does the work that you and I are trying to do, which is volunteer our time, volunteer our knowledge. You know, I do almost everything for free. My buddy the other day was saying, oh, well, you know, those guys that you teach in the park, you should charge them. And I'm going, no, you know, they've been my students for 30 years. I'm not going to charge them money. And the point is also, and this is what I told him, is I want to do something in my life that doesn't revolve around money and profit and gain. You know, I just want to do something just for the sake of doing it, for the sheer pleasure of sharing my experience and knowledge with people, and not, you know, dirty it and muddy it up by asking for money. That's just my opinion. But of course, if you have this kind of attitude towards life, you and I know you're going to be pretty poor. So I did put up a donate button recently because things have been tough.
Yeah, yeah. I'm about to give every penny I have to the tax man.
Yeah.
Every penny. I mean, every penny. They seem to have this thing calculated.
Oh, yeah.
Because I am, as of Monday, going to be flat broke. Completely broke. Zero. Oh,
I believe it. Yeah, me too. I just got a writing commission an hour ago, which saved my ass from being homeless next month, you know.
Right, exactly. We are living like this month-to-month stress of, oh my God, can I get to zero? You know, that's always my goal every month. Can I get to zero? Which means I paid my bills and I'm not out living in a school bus.
Exactly, yeah.
But right now we live in this time where I think we're really wasting a power that we have, and that is crowdsourcing, crowdfunding.
You know, I was just thinking about that. I did run two very successful crowdfunding campaigns on Kickstarter, and they funded my book and one of my art projects. So that worked out well, and I'm thinking of running another one. I have some big ideas.
Well, you know what, Stefan, and I hate to say this, but if you were to run that book right side by side with a deck of cards, you're going to find that deck of cards is going to outdo you by 10
Oh, I know. I was running this program. It was a brilliant program. It was going to be extraterrestrial communication, frequency vibrations, you know. I mean, it's space, intergalactic, global art project involving everyone in the world, right? Like, I know you'd have to see the video. Anyways, and right next to it was a program selling a poster.
And it was making 10 times as much as you.
The poster was making almost $100,000, and I'm yep. going, oh my God, for a poster. And you know, I just trial ballooned this thing. I got nothing, you know. I closed it down after a week. I just wanted to see if anybody would respond, just, you know, because the thing with crowdsourcing is it's good and it's bad, because what you have to do is you have to hit up all your friends, you know. That's what right. you're doing, right? You got to send out your emails to all your old high school buddies, and you know, any previous listeners that have called in or whatever. You got their email address, send them out. You got to hit up your friends for a donation, and the crowdfunding platform does nothing to promote you. That's why I trial ballooned this last project. I didn't send out anything to any of my friends, didn't post it to Facebook. I just wanted to see if the platform itself would generate any leads whatsoever, and it doesn't. So you have to do all your own marketing, all your own begging. You have to, you know, do everything, and then give these guys 7%.
Exactly.
So exactly. It's a love-hate relationship I have with crowdfunding.
Yeah. 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 Having to use the site or certain, you know, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, and things of that nature are ridiculous when you have a website that anyone could go and send you a buck. And yeah. I mean, you know, if 10% of the listening audience gave a dollar once a month, just 10% of them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all the bills would be paid. But people feel kind of guilty about only giving a dollar. They feel weird. Like, oh, sorry, I'm only giving a dollar. But, you know, if 6,000 people give a dollar, then,
oh, yeah. You know,
I don't know. I just feel like there's a huge power there for us to start to sponsor community organizations, to be able to do stuff. And we can't seem to get the people out of the feed. You know, right now I'm battling with Twitter. I've been banned on Facebook 9 times. Now, the whole thing with Facebook, have you seen this article? I downloaded the information on Facebook has on me, and oh my God.
See so that?
You can go and download all the information that Facebook has on you. Now, the reason Facebook has deleted my account, well, they don't even delete it. They just deny me access, is because I won't provide them with a real name, a real birth date, or even my driver's license as they are asking for. And yeah. So they just block me. And 9 times I've been blocked. But you know what? You go to your Facebook and you can download your files and your Facebook data, and you'll get a folder and you get the index file, and it's raw data of your whole Facebook account. And you can see all the people that you unfriended. You can, your entire phone book will be in there. Everything that you have in your phone will be in there. And Google, you know, they have even more. You know, they got decaplied 10 times as much information on there. Just taking down your data, using it against you, and, you know, Zuckerberg's in Congress saying, yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, I'm
we want everybody to be nice. We want everybody to be nice, Stefan, and so we need to control the narrative.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's why we were talking earlier, from the very beginning of the internet, I've never used an alias or an avatar.
I'm the opposite. Huh? I've never been me on the internet.
Okay. Yeah. And the reason for that is I think they know who you are anyway. So hiding behind an
Google
avatar
does, yeah.
or an alias, they know who it is, you know. And what I think it does is give you a false sense of confidence so that you're more likely to say things you wouldn't want published in a police report.
You know? Using an alias.
Yeah, using an alias. Like, so you might say things using an alias, you know, like, oh, you know, I'm going to meet you on the plaza and we'll buy a quarter pound of Keef or whatever, you know. Which, you know, here in Toronto, they have arrested guys for tweeting that.
Right.
Know? Yeah.
That's right. You can get arrested for your tweets. No doubt.
Yeah. they hacked in. They found some guys were talking about, oh, I'm going to, you know, buy an ounce of weed from you at the plaza. And the cops are waiting for them at the plaza, you know. Anyway, so I think they know who you are anyways. And so I don't want the false confidence of being saying things that I wouldn't want out in public. But there's also another strategy to this. And it's one of the 36 strategies as well. And that is hide in plain sight. And that's what I do. I don't care who knows my name, my address, my telephone number, my email account. I'm out there. I'm open. You can learn everything you ever want to know about me. It's on the internet because I have a spotless criminal record. I got a spotless driving record. I got a spotless credit record. I am Mr. Clean. So whatever you want to find out about me, nobody's ever going to find out any dirt about me, even though, just between you and me, I probably commit 5 felonies every day. But
it's hard not to. It's really hard not to commit a felony these days.
It's almost impossible. I'm pretty sure all of your listeners have committed a felony at least once this week, because there are so many laws on the books that not even lawyers or judges are aware of. And if somebody wanted to find something to convict you with, I'm pretty sure you've done it.
Yes, it's true. This is true. And, I mean, it is an important point, this whole privacy situation. You know, when somebody says, well, it's okay if they take everything because I don't do anything wrong. Of course, we got to stand somewhat in opposition of that mentality.
Yeah, but here's my idea about that is you can't stop them. And
right.
We've never been able to stop them, and they've always done this. I knew this way back in 1985, and I'll tell you why. I was friends with the CIA station chief for Taipei, Taiwan. Now, the only reason I was friends with him because we had this, you know, multiple murderer friend in common. And it's in the expat community, you meet people you wouldn't, like if I was back here in Canada, you know, bankers and presidents and, you know, diplomats and politicians and things like that. You know. Anyway, so my friend told me, he says, I saw my FBI file and it's as thick as two phone books. And I went, get out of here. I don't believe you. You know, so I went up to one time we were at one of his many drinking parties. Because he had a nice house and a fully stocked bar, and basically everybody was alcoholics. And so we go to his house and we drink, and I asked him, I said, you know, maybe you can't answer this. I said, but, you know, Richard told me you guys have a file on him as long as your arm. And he goes, oh, yeah. He says, it's bigger, bigger than that. And he says, you know, we record every telephone conversation. And this is back in 1985, right? I said, oh, my God, how can you record every telephone conversation? How would you process that? And he says, well, here in Taiwan, labor is cheap. So they source it out, you know. But they've been doing this for now 35 years that I know of, collecting every bit of information about you. It's all compiled. There's a big folder on everybody that's listening right now. You will have no, like what you said, what you downloaded from Facebook, guaranteed. The government has that folder times 10 on everybody that's listening.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
I mean, I remember when Echelon came online and the UK-US alliance put Echelon in Australia, and it was the major listening post routing all of the telephone numbers and all the calls through there. And, you know, Echelon's not a secret, folks. You know, we all know. So, yeah, I certainly have lived under the notion of Big Brother since the creation of Echelon, and maybe even before that when I was first arrested back in my teenage days. They did also at the police station have a large folder on me, which shocked me because this is my first time in a police station. And they pulled out this inch-thick folder. They knew who was in my van. They knew who cooked dinner. They called us the family. They had a name for us.
Oh, my God.
It was freaky. I was like, oh, my God. You know, this is really, really freaking me out. And maybe that was the beginning of my whole conspiracy theory notions. You know, I wasn't into any of this at that point. I was just out of high school. But... yet there it was right in front of my face. There was this, but yes, absolutely. I mean, the only people that really know who I am and all my data is Google, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, other than the CIA and the deep state and all of those guys.
Yeah. They know you better than your own mother.
Yeah. I don't hide either, Stefan. I've always been one when Echelon, you know, this is back, folks, when we had, you know, coil phones, you know, that plugged into the wall. And my friends would call me and go, bomb, 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 terrorist, terrorist, terrorist. Hey, Echelon, what's going on? And we would leave messages for the agents, you know, and tell them, you know, hey, you know, we're here for the good of humanity. You obviously know that that's our purpose here. If you're listening, then you know we're the good guys. And yeah. Hopefully you're on our side. You know, we used to leave messages to them like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So listen, it's good to know because you're always under surveillance. I assume that everywhere I go, I'm being recorded.
Now they got those Nest systems. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I hadn't talked about this yet. But they've got those Nest systems where you can put that camera on your door and see who's at your door. Well, you know, that's, of course, going into the cloud, folks. And so once the AI mind cloud has all that data. I mean, you can't even go to someone's doorstep, Stefan, without having facial recognition technology coming right at you.
Yeah. And so that's the way it is, folks. Now, the strategy, again, is to kind of hide in plain sight, because if you think you can evade it, forget about it, you know, unless you, you know, live in a cave somewhere in Montana, you know, up in the mountains. But anywhere near civilization, they recognize you, they record you, they listen to everything, they track your iPhone, they track your IPS address. So you have to be like a magician. And this is what I used to do when I was in Taiwan. For example, I could smoke a joint walking down the street in Taiwan because I used this magician's trick where I palm a cigarette and smoke a joint so I can take a hit off the joint, then flip it around so that the joint is hidden and people only see a cigarette in my hand. So you have to use like a magician's trick. You have to do stuff out in the open, but in a way that even if they're watching you, they won't spot it. And there's a little bit of a trick to that. I'm actually working on a book. I'm editing a book, a communist publication, which is, I think it's really important for us to study the enemy. And it's called How to Master Secret Work. And it's all about, you know, espionage and creating resistance cells and things like that. Stuff that's going to come in handy soon. But what I'm adding to the book is the idea that you have to be able to carry out your subversive activities while people are watching you and they still don't see what you're doing. And there's a trick to it. But that's the way you have to behave in life now, because if you think you can hide or put on a disguise, they're going to get you anyways, you know. So anyways, that's my take on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I've found is if you don't believe you're committing a crime, say you were smoking that joint down the street without a cigarette in your hand, but you felt you were perfectly okay and you gave it not a thought, people don't notice.
They don't notice, no.
They may smell something, but because you're acting completely normal, they, you know, wouldn't even suspect you.
Absolutely. They wouldn't suspect you, but I wouldn't like double fail safe by having a cigarette at the same time, you know.
Well, that's in case you ran into authority.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. The snafu principle.
Yeah. And in Taiwan and in Hong Kong and that, you know, the police there, the secret police, man, they are sneaky and they're everywhere. You know, it could be like the noodle vendor with the little push cart at the side of the road. The guy's a cop, you know. The taxi drivers are cops or informants. The little old lady that's selling newspapers from a plastic crate, she's a cop. So you don't know where they are. They can be anywhere at any time.
Yeah, it's honestly getting that way here. I mean, I had the cable lady stop by my door. She rang the doorbell 3 times in quick succession, and you know, it sent me alarm bells. And so I'm jumping up. I'm like, what's going on? I'm still in my pajamas. And I look around the corner and I see this official looking outfit. She's got like a vest on with the reflecting, you know, it looked like a cop or some sort of meter maid or something. I didn't know. So I've decided, I guess I need to go answer. And it's the lady from the cable company. And she's like, well, I'm just the lady from the cable company and was wondering if your cable and internet were working okay. And I said, no, actually, it's hanging up every day about 5 o'clock. It seems to be slow. And she says, oh, well, that's not supposed to be. You should call the company. And she left.
Uh-huh.
I was so paranoid. Why was she at my door? I could have called the company. I knew I could call the company. What was her purpose?
Yeah. That standard spycraft, you know, it's really good to read these, like the real story, how they really train people. And that's a very common ploy. Let's say what they'll do is they'll cut off your hydro. We'll cut off your power, and now the lights are out. And they'll send some guy dressed up in a hydro outfit, and he says, "Well, I just got to come through and check this, that, and the other, right?" And of course, you're going to let him in your house. He runs around, takes a look at everything, and then they leave, you know. And then they'll turn the power off after he's gone, or he might be in the house checking everything else, and then leaving a listening device or something. Or maybe if they really want to screw you over, he might be dropping, a little baggie of cocaine behind the couch. And next couple of hours, the cops burst down your door. You know, that happens all the time. That's the way these people operate.
Yeah, it's going to get freaky if it's not already.
It's good to be paranoid.
Yeah, it is. It's good to keep that, you know, it keeps you alive and keeps you aware. And, you know, as we were talking last time, we spoke of being aware of your surroundings, of being in the now. Of feeling that feeling of the warrior.
Yeah.
It makes all the difference in how life interacts with you. I think this has been one of the critical factors of my show, trying to get that importance out, that your consciousness actually dictates your manifest reality.
Yeah.
It's crazy, but true, folks.
Yeah. You see, you know, we live in the world, and the world is a dangerous place. There's no way around it. It's dangerous. It always has been. That's nature, you know. So to go through life thinking that because you're, you know, Miss Liberal middle class housewife or something, that nothing bad will ever happen to you, that is a big blind spot. And as we'll talk about later, that kind of attitude will get you killed, because the predators out there see that. And guess who they're going to go for? They're going to go for me or you that, you know, is taking a look behind us every 5 minutes and, you know, got the awareness of our surroundings that people pick up on, and they sense that you're aware. And the predators will leave you and me alone. But, you know, the people that don't understand that life can be cruel and dangerous and go through life in a haze of complacency, they will be targeted. So,
yes, yes. And, you know, now we're under this threat of, well, World War III. We've got this idea that a chemical attack happened in Syria, and now Trump and Putin, and I'm getting up each morning checking my Twitter feed to see if I got to climb under my desk or not.
Yeah, duck and cover.
You remember that? Of course. They don't do that anymore, do they?
But I remember seeing the YouTube versions of it.
Yeah. No, we did it.
When my parents bought the first house here in Toronto back in 1962, the house came with an optional bomb shelter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was, you know, just shortly after, I think, the Cuban Missile Crisis and the height of the Cold War. And they sold houses with, you know, you could have an extra car garage or a bomb shelter.
That's just programming into the mind, into our minds. You know, my whole life, I've been trained to prepare for nuclear war.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I'm ready. Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I'm at is, you know, let's bring on the show. Let's go ahead. I'm telling people just go because we live under this evil of empire and this false illusion that empire is necessary for the state of humanity to exist.
Yeah. No, it's terrible. This whole mass hypnosis of statehood. It's madness. It's insane. We as a people. Have you ever seen that medical show, the 90-pound tumor, or the 100-pound tumor?
No.
Oh, it was disgusting. This woman had a 100-pound cancerous tumor growing out of her back. It was like Alien or something. It was just hideous. And that's what we are now. The population has this 100-pound tumor called the government, and it's on our back. And the problem with removing it is when you start to cut it away, the patient bleeds to death. Unless you go very slowly and cauterize each blood vessel, because and that's where we are now. It's so big, we can't get rid of it without a lot of bloodshed. There's no way. The government's not going to vote to reduce its power. The government's not going to vote to, lay off, a few of their parasites. So it will never get smaller. And the only way to get rid of it is to surgically remove it. But if you do that, it's going to be blood in the streets. That's all there's to it. So either the government kills us or we try to remove it, which will probably kill us anyways.
There has to be the warrior mentality applied to this transition. Because right now, there are so many people in people's lives that want you to be angry about things that you can't control. Can I get you angry about this, that, and the other? And I think from that mindset, you're already stepping off on the wrong foot.
Yeah.
If you're just coming at, most of the things that people, I could be a millionaire if I just sat here and complained about how stupid everybody was. Those seem to be the most popular shows. And that's a simple task. But trying to show the goodness of humanity is near impossible. And everybody wants to focus on, you should be angry. And I want you to be angry with me. And maybe right now I don't want to be angry.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that, Freeman. I was thinking the same thing the other day because, there's a lot of shows where they just, they ridicule, the leftists and the liberals and the college students and all that. And they analyze the latest little scandal, this, that, and the other, and complain and bitch, and everybody should get angry about it. And the problem with that is I'm the same way. Like, okay, there's other people, they do it. A lot of them do a good job. It's often entertaining. But it's not me. I'm not the one that's going to get up there and complain about it and ridicule. Because it's all of that, really, it's first of all, it's beneath you. We've got to rise above it. And what you and I focus on, I believe, is instead of saying everything that's wrong with the world and getting angry about it, we're trying to provide answers and solutions and how to be positive and how to live with it. And that's what I've tried to do with my books and what I try to do with our interviews is provide some, okay, well, what can we do? What can you and I do to make it a better world rather than just sit and get all pissed off for nothing?
Yeah, so A Master's Guide to the Way of the Warrior, is, as you have titled it.
Yeah, that's my, I'll be honest with you. If you follow my publication, it is really my philosophy. My first book, The 36 Strategy, it's how to be ruthless. And why did I write that? Because everybody always said to me, oh, Steph, you're so nice, you're so naive. And I'm going, no, I'm not naive. I know exactly how bad the world is. I just won't let it taint me. I am still going to be positive. I'm still going to be generous with my time and my money. I'm still going to be give people, a chance. I'm not going to condemn people outright. And so this is taken often as being naive and gullible. I'm not naive and gullible. I'm just as tough as nails as anybody else. It's just that I don't want to go through life where I have to be like this mean guy all the time, ready for a fight. So I wrote the first book, 36 Strategies, and it teaches you how to be ruthless. So nobody can tell me I don't know how to be ruthless because I wrote the book on how to be ruthless. Right? But the thing is, why should you learn how to be ruthless is so that you can read when other people are using those tactics against you. That's why I wrote it. It's a solution because we get suckered all the time. There's a million cons out there, and we'll eventually often fall prey to one con or another. But if you understand how ruthless people operate, then you are better able to protect yourself. Then the second book, Defense Against a Psychopath, the most famous chapter is my video, or the second book is The Art of Urban Survival. But the very first chapter in that book is Defense Against a Psychopath. And again, this is providing solutions for people because we know how ruthless people operate. We know their tactics, their modus operandi. But now you need to understand their psychology, which is they're psychopaths. And until you understand the psychology, you won't believe what's going on in the world. It's just, it's too weird. It's too bizarre. How can, you know, how can these rich people kidnap and rape and eat babies? I mean, you know, no, who's going to believe that stuff? No. Once you study psychopaths, you understand the kind of mentality of that, then it all makes sense. Yes, pedophilia. If it's psychopaths, of course, that's what you would expect. It's one of the classic symptoms of being a psychopath is they're pedophiles and they're child molesters and they're child rapists and they're child murderers. That's what psychopaths like to do, or enough of a proportion of them like to do that, that you can pretty much tell that, you know, if you go to the house of a psychopath, there's a, you know, a good 50-50 chance that they're going to be a pedophile. So that's the second book. So now we know their modus operandi and their tactics. And then Defense Against the Psychopath is very short. You can watch the video or read the it's a free download from my website. You know, I give this stuff away for free too. You can download the PDF or the booklet. So now you know the mentality, right? So you won't be shocked when you read about their crimes. It won't horrify you or it won't be unbelievable because now you know. And now my latest book, Way of the Warrior, is sort of like, now that you know all these people, you got to know that if you're going to survive this, if you're going to survive, because they run our society, they run the world, right? So if you're going to survive the world, man, you got to be as tough and sometimes as ruthless as they are. You have to be ruthless for good, you know? And so the Way of the Warrior is, you know, it's the best I can do to try and pass on what I have learned after 35 years.
And it is good knowledge, very good knowledge to take in. We, you know, because it seems far more ignorant and naive to follow the crowd, to be the one cheering along with all the rest.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's one of the 12 rules for warriors. Don't follow the crowd. We'll talk about that.
All right. Yeah, because I mean, right now, our planet has been thrown into chaos. Everybody is just bitching and complaining, and nobody's willing to give in or give up on the system that they're complaining about. Yeah. I'm like you, Stefan. I'm like, well, why don't you just go into nature for a little while and see what life as a human really is.
Mm-hmm.
Find out what's necessary, what's real, and what you truly feel, and then bring that back into this world. And I mean, well, you're going to be in your antithesis.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, well, since you brought it up, it's rule number 11, spend as much time as you can in nature. And the reason for that is, all the time we spend here, we're just bombarded with lies and deceptions and scams and cons and fantasies. And, you know, it's a world of unreality. We spend all our days in it. You know, we get up in the morning, we get in the car and drive to work and blah, blah, blah. By the time you get back and then you turn on the TV set, you've had 20 hours of bullshit fed to you nonstop. That will eventually destroy your soul. It's a poison. It will eat away at you, and over time, you will become what I call one of the zombies, the living dead. These are people that go through life, you know, but there's nothing there. Their souls have withered up and died and blown away, and what's left, the husk of a body, just going through the mechanical pre-programmed motions of life. So in order to counteract that, you have to spend time in nature, because nature, with all its cruelty and its beauty, still nature never lies to you. So, you know, to be outside, outdoors, whatever it is, go for a walk in the woods or a canoe paddle or a bike ride, at least that is real. And that the realness of it, the truth of being out in nature, will help to cleanse you of all the poisonous lies and deceptions that you've had to endure, you know, for most of our lives.
Yes. Yes. And you will find that family is what matters. Food is what matters. And life will come into focus in a way that you're not lost in this quagmire of deceit, because we can't take on the world's problems. We can't. You know, it's a false belief system to think that you can fix the world by yelling at it. And yet there's this thing right in front of us, the here and now, where if we were to focus on health, on, you know, getting into nature, on training and improvement of our own bodies, that this blend would then start to bring together the world that we need. And people feel as if that's maybe a selfish notion of, well, I'm just going to sit here and work on training myself into being a proper human being while the world is crumbling around me. But the world's always crumbling around us. But we are always here. And, you know, if we start to blend this mind-body and start to focus on things right in front of us, and that's what's so hard, I think, in this current age of global communication, where we're getting our feeds and they're constantly feeding us with more narratives and more things to worry about and more. And we think that if we are angry about all of that, if we stress about it, we worry about it, if we yell at our friends about it, that we're doing something to better the planet.
Yeah. Because what else can you do? You know, one of the principles of warriorship is to leave your environment better than the way you found it. So when I go for a walk in the woods, I will pick up some trash on the way out. So, I mean, I can't solve, you know, the recycling problem and the air pollution problem or whatever. But when I've gone down that trail is now cleaner and better for me having been there. And that's the way I approach most things in life. You know, if I meet some people, then, you know, I try to, you know, cook dinner. I'm a great cook because I think cooking is very important. And I think sharing bread with your friends and your neighbors and your family is the most pleasurable experience in the world. So
such a lost art.
It's a lost art. Yeah. So I've, you know, people that know me, I'm always saying, come over, we're going to have a barbecue, I'm going to do shish kebab, I'm going to do my beer batter, deep fried onion rings that melt in your mouth. You know, like, I don't cook for myself. That's why, you know, I told you before the show, we've been holed up here for 6 months, you know, I've turned into a hermit, and I don't cook because it's just for me. So I heat up a hot dog or a Roman noodle, right? But if I have five friends coming over, man, I can cook up a storm. I enjoy it, you know, because that to me is fun.
You and I are a lot alike, Stefan.
I know, Freeman.
Yeah, I love to cook as well, but yeah, it's, you know, although I do make myself 3-course dinners at night, you know, even though I'm all by myself, I like to have that nicely prepared meal. My family was the type that we gathered at the dinner table every night, you know, and this was part of my structure, and now it's just basically gone. And I mean, I'm about to go to Rainbow. I'm looking so forward to this. It's in June, and yet my mind is already there. And I see this world of people there where everyone is fed, where, you know, all you got to do is walk around to find friends and food. And it's just so blissful and amazing. I wish my neighborhood could be like that, where I could just walk down the street and see what the Joneses have made for breakfast, and they're welcoming me in because they love to cook. And, you know, it seems like that type of hobbit type lifestyle is something that people think is just wasting time on planet Earth. You know, what is progress? What are we after when we have glow-in-the-dark cats and we're launching SpaceX rockets every day? And what is progress as AI and robots start to take over, and yet we still can't just have dinner together?
Yeah. And, you know, that is, it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. And you see so little of it these days.
Very little. Very little. It's a shock to people if I come over and make a meal or something. It's like, what weird thing is going on here in my kitchen? Oh, my God.
Yeah. You come over with a Tupperware full of spaghetti and meatballs, you know.
Yeah. And let me tell you, folks, now, let me just state this, that when I was feeding the Kansas University basketball and football teams gourmet meals twice a day, they won every championship. And they wanted to know my secret, and it's love. It was love. Yes, it's true.
See, you could have sold yourself that way. You could have made a fortune, you know, personal chef to the basketball stars.
There you go. There you go. You know, the corporate heads came to me, and they were like, well, we really want to know your secret. They wanted me to go around and teach other cooks. And I looked at them in their suits, and I smiled and said, love's an ingredient. I can't teach that. And they just, their jaws dropped, because they were offering me like $30,000 a year. This was back in the, you know, 90s sometime. And I turned them down, you know, telling them, sorry, love's something I can't really teach.
Yeah. And it's not for sale.
And it's not for sale. That's true.
My love does not have a price tag.
There you go. Yeah, I can't help it, Stefan. I see things. I must nurture them. I can't help it. I'm a caretaker.
I know. I'm the same way. And, you know, the only thing that pisses me off a little bit is that people think there's something wrong with you for being like that. You know.
Right. In this current world, that is, you know, you're confused. Obviously, you are far too nice. My parents told me that all the time, that I'm too nice and too smart for my own good.
Yeah.
My mom would say I'm too nice. My dad would say I was too smart.
Oh, yeah.
I lived with that my whole life.
Yeah.
And it's true. I mean, you know, honestly, in a psychopathic world, I am definitely way too nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's again, why I wrote the book, The Way of the Warrior, because it's not for big, macho, tough guys to read. You know, like I always told people when I taught martial arts, and especially the kung fu styles, was meant to teach the underdog. It wasn't meant for the, you know, the high school athletes and you know, all the stories surrounding these martial arts styles and their origin stories, you know, sort of like the comic book origin stories. But almost typically, all the origin stories start off with, he was a young, sickly boy and an orphan, right? And then, you know, he learned martial arts and overcame his illnesses and his, and he went on to become the great founding master of the White Crane style. So I like that mythology that, you know, you take the people that are picked on, that are too nice and all this, and you teach them to be strong so that they won't be a victim because they're too nice.
Yes. Yeah, it is something that you have to learn. I was bullied in school. I didn't know how to bully back. I really didn't. I didn't know that I could hit that other person. No one ever told me I could. And I don't know if I was conditioned or if it was just my soul, but I could be punched in the face, as I was in high school, and not react other than to maybe cry.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a tragedy, though. You know, like, I mean, I am not a violent person. Everybody knows me. I mean, you couldn't piss me off enough to take a swing at you. But you punch me in the face. No, that's crossed all the lines. And at that point, if I were to tear your head off, I'd be perfectly justified. And that's the problem. Like, that you should have to stand there, and because you're a nice person and you are violated and abused physically, and you don't feel that you have the right to retaliate. This is what our society has done to us. You know, that this is part of the, you know, the kind of emasculation process that we've been under for, you know, 50, 60, 100 years now. Who knows how long this has been going on? But it's hard. I'm the same way. I don't want to fight back or anything, but I do have mentally a preparedness that you mess with me, that's it. You're going down. And so I can be as nice as I want, and nobody's going to mess with me because I'm already prepared mentally. And for some reason, there's some kind of psychic connection there, Freeman. You know, people sense it. It works on a subconscious level, and you don't have to puff out your chest or get tattoos on your face to scare people. All you need to do is have the commitment, the internal commitment, that if you violate me, then you are in big trouble. And just having that is enough to deter almost most of the predators anyways.
So at this point, we can almost cut to the point where we're preparing ourselves for these interactions. Nothing is physically happening to us in our homes at this moment, no matter how much the media is telling us, you know, have concern, this and that and the other. But in our own personal lives, you know, it's not really there. It's not like I'm witnessing the pedophiles and I'm not witnessing the Syrian gases. I'm not witnessing the things that I'm supposed to. But in my world, you know, everything seems A-okay, even though I'm aware of all the bad, negative things going on. So it seems that we need to get into the mentality now where we are training to be the warrior in an instance that we may never even need, in the hopes that we will never need it. And then when the time comes to react, that forceful moment when the jackbooted thugs are kicking down your door, then you are mentally prepared. But on top of this, taking on this mentality of the warrior, then as you walk down the street, you actually manifest a completely different reality than the one you would if you were feeling like a victim.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, you're right that we should embody, you know, these warrior principles in case something bad goes on, and hopefully we'll never need to use it. But just by embodying it makes everyday life much better. There is something about, you know, and it's not that hard, you know, but there's something about the confidence that you exude, that people trust you more often, people defer to you more often, people will be nicer and friendly. It's not just that you're scaring away the bad guys, you're also attracting good people to you because they sense it in you as well. So it's a double-edged sword. Yes, you know, you're a confident, self-aware individual that's struggling hard to bring good to the world. This scares the bad people away, but it also attracts better people to you. So, yes, it's good to have it in case we need it. And it's like the parable about the student and the sword master. And the student says, "Master, you're a gardener, but why do you teach me sword fighting?" And the master says, "I'd rather be a sword master in a garden than a gardener in a war."
Right.
Yeah, because our everyday life, sure, we can all deal with it. We don't need anything. So, you know, we don't need, most of us aren't being gassed right now, maybe soon. But right now, today, we're not being gassed or nuked or bombed or sniped. But if we were, then would you want to have the same mentality that you do right now? Or would you want to be able to switch on to another type, another, you know, mode of reality in which you are a tough, hard to hit, elusive, sneaky son of a bitch that they can't pin down and they can't screw over? Well, that's who you want to be then.
Absolutely. Honestly, Stefan, in the future, I hope to be that swordsman in the garden, because I really do want to find peace on planet Earth. I want to find the ability to just sit in my garden and work on it without the sense of feeling like I'm neglecting the world.
Yeah. Well, you know, you balance it, right? You do something, you do good where you can, and then the rest of the time, I also feel it's very important for people to look after themselves, enjoy their lives. All this worry, yeah, it could all end tomorrow, but it doesn't mean you can't, go out and play guitar in the backyard tonight,
There's actually a good philosophy of believing that it'll all end tomorrow, and you're living for now, right?
Well, as I think it's Stephen who wrote me said, you're looking for a bit of Zen, and yes, that is Zen. One of the principal tenets of Zen is remember you're going to die. That's the punchline to a lot of Zen stories. It's you have to remember that death is always a potential at any time, at anywhere. And so adjust and live your life accordingly. And it would be a different world if we all lived each day as though it were our last day. Would we have time for all this petty bullshit that sucks up our lives and our money and our time and our souls? I mean, most of that stuff would drop by the wayside. You don't have time for that. You're going to die tomorrow. So what's important for today? Well, one last ride on the motorcycle, one last big dinner with the family. Well, if you did that every day, what a life that would be, So, yes, that's your moment of Zen.
Yes. I do believe those are the methods to change the world. I don't believe that these attacks, these personal attacks, these attempts at trying to be an armchair quarterback are going to change a damn thing. But what Stefan is telling us right now, and this modality of the warrior, that's what will change the paradigm, and that's what needs to shift, because then the form will follow the function, and we can all live blissfully in our gardens, even with our warrior talents, and be happy with it, and feel fulfilled, and feel as if life is changing due to the goodness of our souls, and due to the goodness of what we give back to the world in just the smallest ways that are actually possible. So that is my Jerry Springer moment for us, and we're wrapping up this first hour here, Stefan. Folks, his website is chinastrategies.com. As many of you already know, you can get there and shop, get his books, look into the Master's Guide of the Way of the Warrior, see all the free work that he's given to you, and then maybe kick him a buck through his donation and make it feel like this was all worthwhile. Hopefully, Stefan, someday I'll be above zero and I'll maybe be able to pay my guests for these 2 hours of time that they give me.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to do it, Freeman. I don't need money from the show. And, we do what we can, and that's it. I'm going to go back to my 12 rules for warriors. Rule number 8, give for the joy of giving, but expect no return. And so I like talking to you, Freeman. It's a lot of fun. It's great to communicate with somebody that's on the same page as you. It's really refreshing. We have a lot in common, and I'm happy to do it.
Great. Me too. Me too. And I love that this is what I get to do with my life, is talk to people like you and share the world and try to find that, to try and remind everyone of their humanity. I think that's what we're doing here, really.
Yeah. Well, geez, we're going to give all the listeners the impression that we've got a real bromance going on here.
Hey, it's starting to develop. I promised you dinner after this.
Can I take a quick break?
Yes, absolutely. Folks, we are going to jump over into the members section. We're going to take 5 and be right back. So if you're not a subscriber, come on over, help support the show, sponsor it so that I can keep it free to all the tens of thousands listening, and then also you get all the bonus material. So freemantv.com is the place to go, and if you only want to come there once, just go to my fantastic new search feature. I have a search now on freemantv.com since there's 13 years of data there. Go to the search and just search, how do I listen? how to listen to the Free Zone, and you will find a multitude of ways to get this stream straight to you without the censorship of Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and all the others. You can just come right here. All you got to do is sign up for the feed, and you're good to go. It'll come straight to your iPhone, iTunes, Android, Stitcher. Of course, we just got up on Spotify, so I'm pretty excited about that. But there are a multitude of ways of listening to this show, and I hope that you will use those. And I hope that you'll come over and also sponsor, kick in, and help things keep going, because that's the only thing that keeps this show going is you. And obviously, as Stefan has said, you guys are amazing. And I have to completely agree with that. I want to thank you so much for transforming my life into something that I am very excited about. And helping us keep this thing moving along. So thank you all so much. And if you're not a member, I'll see you next week with another great show. If you are, let's kick it on over and we'll move into the member section now. So we will see you all next week.